spend the rest of our evening tonight. Ecclesiastes chapter 7. And tonight we'll start in about verse number 8. I think we finished off last week in verse 5. So tonight we'll start in verse number 8. In verse 8, Ecclesiastes chapter 7 and verse number 8 reads, "The end of a thing is better than its beginning. The patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit." Again, the end of a thing is better than its beginning. The patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. What do you think he means? Most of what he's saying in the beginning, the end of a thing is better than the beginning. And the patient spirit is better than the proud. How many people in here have had surgery? Most have. And when you have surgery, there's a lot of difficulties that go in the beginning of the surgery. Especially those that have perhaps had life-threatening surgery. Those who have had pretty serious surgery. Those folks have to go through a lot of difficulty in the beginning of surgery. After surgery is over, they struggle with recouping from the surgery that they had. But a few months, a few weeks, or a few months, or a year or two down the road, what happens? Things are better. Okay? And as Solomon says here, the beginning of a thing, in essence, is the worst part. The beginning is worse than the end. How many of us have projects at work? How many of us have worked, labored, and bid on projects, and we spend a lot of time and effort trying to get together a package or a project that we're working on, and we spent time maybe away from the family, we spent hours and hours on a project, and you know, we think, it's only the end, you know. But then, after the project is finished and we perhaps get the bid or, you know, the project is accepted, then we take a sigh of breath and we think, this is a lot better at the end than it was in the beginning. Okay? And I think that's what Solomon is telling us here. What I'd like to do is somebody turn to, and I want to relate that thought to what Jesus says in Luke chapter 14, verses 26 through 27, and hit those two parts. Then we're going to read to the end of the chapter. But what I'd like to do is look at some biblical examples quickly of some folk in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, and we're going to miss a lot of them. But let's look at some folks, and probably you've got some in your own mind, who began their race and their struggles, but the end of that race or that struggle was far better than the beginning. Okay? Somebody read Luke chapter 14, verses 26 through verse 27. All right. When you look at verses 28 through the end of the chapter, without reading that, what does Jesus connect verses 26 and 27 to? What's he connecting all this together with and the end of those chapters? What's he saying? All right. He gives two examples. What are they? What are those two examples he gives of the price that we have to pay? Okay, but he gives a couple of examples. What are they? Okay, but in the latter part of that chapter, he gives a couple of examples. What are they? He gives a man going to war, a king going to war, and what does he say? Does he not go and inquire to those that he's fighting and see if he can pursue peace, lest he'll be overtaken, you know, he's got a cost. Or another guy is doing what in this chapter? What's he doing? He's building a house, all right? And doesn't he sit down? And Jeremy's instruction, as you might know. So Jeremy, when y'all project in construction, do you just say, this is what we're going to do? All right, we're going to do, you know, let's go ahead and start spending the money. What do? You get the cost. Are we going to be able to, with this amount of money, to be able to finish this particular project? Okay, that's called counting cost. All right. Now, there are a lot of people in the Old Testament who counted the cost of the beginning. What about Job? What about the beginning of Job's difficulties? Did Job get discouraged? Was it a struggle for Job at the beginning of his struggle with Satan and the Lord allowing him to do whatever he wanted to do to save, take his life? Was there a cost to account by being a faithful servant of God? Yeah. Because God told Satan, he says, have you considered my servant Job? You know, so there's a price that he had to pay for being a faithful servant. So God said, you need anything you want to except take his life. He took his wife. He didn't take his wife. He took his children, his cattle. He took everything he had. He smoked from the top of his head. The soles of his feet were sore boils. He lived a miserable life. Okay. He had three friends that just hounded him all the time. And what was their reason behind him suffering? You must have done something. You've sinned against God, and that's why you're suffering, okay? But the Bible says all through these things, Job stayed faithful to God. Now, I want to say this quickly as a side note. When Job went through the difficulties, as we do as Christians, when Job went through these difficulties, did he ever question God? Yes. Yes, he did. Did he ever get angry at God? Yes, he did. Was he ever confused as why this is happening to me? Did he ever ask that question? Sure he did. Okay, sure he did. But as he is, that doesn't mean that he wasn't discouraged or downhearted, because we're all that way. But did it cause him to quit? No, it didn't cause him to quit. And then at the end of his life, what happened? Gave him double, and he gave him 10, I believe it was 10 children. There's a passage I want to read quickly, and then we'll go to something else. I want you to turn just a little over to the book of Job, the very last chapter. I think it's 41, 42. And Job makes a profound statement. In Job chapter 42, after in chapter 38, when God question Job, 39, 40, 41. Job makes a statement in chapter 42 and verse 5. And this is what he says. He says, I have heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eyes see you. What does he mean? What do you think he means? I've heard of you by the hearing of your ear, but now my eyes see you. What do you think he means? I think exactly that's what he's saying. And I think that helps us today in our journeys as Christians, okay? We may have a faith in God, a biblical faith in God, but when we endure the trials and tribulations of life, our faith and our strength is far greater at the end than it was as in the beginning. Would you agree? Isn't that what Solomon is saying? The end of a thing is far better than the beginning. All right. There's other examples that we can make mention of. We look at people like Joseph, sold into slavery by his brothers. You know, we look at God's providence to him, and what finally happened to Joseph at the end of all his trials? What happened to him? He was the second man, only to Pharaoh, okay? He counted the cost, was faithful. You look at like Abraham, he counted the cost. Abraham, 75 years old, when God told him to leave the land of Canaan, or the land where he was, right? And he told him that from his seed all nations of the earth would be blessed. At 75 years old, he said that he was going to have a son. How long did it take Abraham and Abraham and Sarah to have a son? How many years? 25 years. Okay? So the end of thing is far better than the beginning. The only difference is we've got to endure. All right? Our life as a Christian, okay? We go back as Jesus in Luke 14, 26 and 27. Before you become a Christian, and I think sometimes, and this is the thought, I think sometimes we're in too big a hurry to get people in the baptistry. Would you maybe do that sometime? Maybe at camp, you know, people get involved in the moment, you know, and, you know, they baptize them and then they fall away and so on and so forth. It's just a thought. But don't you think it would be good for us to sit down and, like Mike and I did Sunday with Tyrone, look, there's a price to pay. There's things you're going to have to give up. There's people you're going to have to give up. Friends you're going to have to give up. Family you're going to have to give up. There's a cost you're going to have to realize you got to pay when you become a Christian. Now, that's difficult. That's difficult in the beginning. But how about the end? How about the end? If I give up everything for the sake of God and His kingdom, put Him first, if I give up, it's going to be hard, it's going to be difficult. But the end is far greater than the beginning. What's the end? Heaven. Heaven. Now, it seems like, especially, you know, I look at Adam and Jeremy and other young people in here, and, you know, they're in their mid-30s, I guess, you know. And they, man, you know, that's 50 years. You know, I got maybe 50 more years. That's a long time. But it's called patience. It's called looking God and His Word. It's called counting the cost, because one day you will be old. And the reward at the end is far greater than the beginning. Okay? And I think that's what Solomon's going to say. Anybody got a thought? Comment. All right. Verse number 9. Do not hasten. Let me get these passages of scripture out first though, before we do it. Proverbs 21:23. Mike, would you get that? All right. Proverbs 13:3. Michael, would you get that? And Proverbs 16:32. Brian, would you get that for me? 1 Corinthians 9:25. John, would you get that for me? 1 Corinthians 9:25. All right, let's read verse 9. Do not hasten in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools. What does he mean? That's pretty simple. Anger rests in the bottom of fools. Is a person who's quick-tempered. Let me say this first. Let's preface this by saying this. Is it a sin to be angry? How do we know?
Christ was angry.
Yeah, the Bible says Christ was angry. He was upset. Is God ever got angry? Yeah. You look at the Old Testament. He was angry a lot with the children of Israel. And the passage that Jeremy mentioned, be angry and sin not, is that? Peter? Doesn't Peter say that? Be angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down on your wrath. So if I get mad at my wife at 8:30 and the sun goes down at 8:55, am I going to have to make up that quick? Is that what that...
You better.
Is that what that means? Not the sun went out. What does it mean, Clint?
If you can't go to bed and get a good night of rest, and I'm that we're on those terms.
Okay. So does he realistically mean that the sun can't go down So, in another words, if I get angry at my wife at 8:30 and the sun goes down at 8:32, and I'm so mad at her, I'm sinning. Is that what I'm talking about? Yeah, don't stew it, okay? Don't let it go on and on and on and on and on. Darryl, do you have a thought?
Take care of it.
I mean, you know, it might be bad to rest on it, you know? You know, if your wife will let you, or your husband will let you, you know? And think about it, you know, over, you know, and then the next day, take care of it or try to work it out, Brother Tim.
Well, you might have it on at 8:30 and 8:31, you might be dead.
That's true. But does that mean as you get angry, you're going to lose your soul? Possibly.
Depends on what you do with it.
Exactly. Possibly. Okay. Be angry and not. Anger is okay as long as it doesn't cause me to sin, right? That's what the Bible says, okay? But it's not an excuse to be angry. So anger rests, as Solomon says, in the bosom of fools. Proverbs 21-23, Mike.
Proverbs 21:23, whoever guards his mouth and tongue keeps his soul from trouble.
Okay. How true that? We know how true that is, right? Whoever keeps his tongue keeps himself in trouble. Why is that? Why is a person who's not quick-tempered probably not going to have difficulties in life as much as someone who does? Why is that? That's right. What you say... You can say, John, to Amber, you can say something pretty bad, you know. But, let's stand up, would you? John has never said anything bad to his wife. Stand up, John. You'd be like Vernon, who is a real man, you know, and maybe. But we've all said things we shouldn't say, right? To our wife, to a lot of, we've all said that. But the point is, that we can't ask for forgiveness, but the words are still there. Being sorry, and I heard this on Andy Griffiths, which I'm a big fan. Andy told Opie one time, sorry is not the magical word that makes everything all right. Right? It doesn't take away hurt. It doesn't take away. Yes, we need to be sorry, but being sorry, it doesn't always take away the hurt, does it? It doesn't. Okay. So that's why we need to be careful with our temper and how quick we are to react. Okay. And I think that's what Solomon is telling us here. Who's got Proverbs
13:3? He that openeth his mouth keepeth
life. Okay. Same thought, same mentality. Proverbs 16:32, John, or who, Brian?
He that is sluggish is better than the mighty, and he that ruleth his spirit, and he that taketh the city.
Okay. 1 Corinthians 9:25, John.
Everyone in peace with the wise is temperate in all things, but if you do what you do, obtain a terrible crown, we for an even character.
What does temperate mean? What is that? Self-control. Okay. Temperate means self-control. As a Christian, living the Christian life, we better be temperate. We better be under control, because if we're not, we can fall away. Okay? All right. Anybody got a thought? Verse 10. Yes, sir, Brother Sam. Who says it?
James 1:19.
Yeah. Let everybody be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath.
Because even when you are angry, if you listen to what the other person has to say, in the person's anger, or in your anger, you learn. And I experienced that if you listen, you learn.
Yeah.
And slow to speak. Because when you have said something, you can never write.
That's true.
And it hurt.
Yeah.
Especially in anger.
Yeah.
And also it says that anger, be quick to anger, does not reflect the
righteousness of God.
Yeah. What does the Bible say? Solomon says a soft answer.
Turn away wrath.
Turns away wrath. Okay.
Well, people right. Words can set it up.
Yes. Darrell? Right. Yeah. Okay. Anybody else got a thought? Verse number 10. This probably fits maybe the older ones than it does the younger ones, because the younger ones don't have as many former days as the older ones do. But listen to what Solomon says. Do not say, why were the former days better than these? For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. Why were the former days better than these? And in other words, how often have we said, I wished that I could live 30 years ago because things were so much better 30 years ago than they are today. Anybody ever made that statement? I wish I could go back and be a kid again or whatever it may be. Thinking that the former days are really better than the days that we are living in today. Is that true? Are the former days better or easier than the days today? Say that. Okay, it does. So were things easier when, well, I better not say that. I say when you were 30. You know, 40, 33, 34. You know, when you were 30, then you are like me. When you're 60, were they easier? It's like the sister says, it's just challenges, different things in life. So Solomon says, don't yearn for the former days, because they're both equal, aren't they? They both have their challenges all throughout life. Let me give you some examples. Sometimes people say, I wish I lived 30 years ago because conditions aren't as great 30 years ago as they are today. Is that true? No. Sin is sin. Now, temptations may come in various forms, but the temptations 30 years ago were just as difficult as the temptations are today. Sin is sin. Doesn't matter what. Okay? So we can't yearn for the former days because things are basically the same. How about this one? Families were more close then than they are today. Is that true? Was that true? Okay. My dad was a sharecropper. Well, my dad's dad was a sharecropper in Georgia. And they would share there was a guy who owned the land. My dad's dad would sharecrop it in the sense that he would work the field and they would share the crop. That's what he would do. Okay. Now, my dad had like 10 brothers and sisters. And the reason why they had so many kids then is what? Freedom, you know? You'd start plowing the mule when you were 6, 7 years old, okay? So it was, they were closer back then, but wasn't due to, I love my family that much. It was due to a different thing. So, you know, we can't say, Mac, that they were closer then because he didn't live back then. And I sure am not asking somebody to give us an example. Now, if you love to, you're welcome to. Some of these older folks that's been here a little longer, Mac, you know.
Well, one thing we realize, as bad as we think things are now, 50 years from now, our kids will look back and say, man, I wish I could live 50 years ago.
Yeah.
We're thinking this so bad now.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's true, but it's still the same. What makes families close, Jeremy? Yeah.
I can go back 15 years ago, and man, I had a little bit of a good time. I don't know if everybody made a decision.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's very true. But what makes families closer today? What makes families close? Is it being a sharecropper? What makes families close? Yeah, the family close because you got a good leader in the parents that make that family close. Okay.
Like-mindedness. That's what many of us close, whether it be family or blood family or church family. Yes. Like-mindedness.
Yes. That's a great point because we're all alike. We have something in common. A family has things in common. The Lord's family has things in common. Okay, what is that? The Lord. All right. Would you ever, talking about 30 years ago, 15, 20, 30 years ago, would you want to live with your mama? At least a time or two, I thought about that. That would be nice. No bills, no worries, no headaches, no nothing, that's another story. So, how about this one? And this is one that we all could probably relate with. It seems like 50 years ago, in the 50s and 60s, I wish I could go back 60 years ago, because it seems like the gospel, those brethren back then reached more people than we do today. How about that? They reached more people back then than we do today.
It's the same
gospel. Is that true? Is it true they reached more than we do today? Yes. The church of our Lord, and some of you older ladies will know this, the church of Christ in the 40s, 50s, and 60s was the fastest growing religious group in the country. Why? That's it. People had a desire to reach out to those that were lost.
That's why I was saying that the gospel changed. We don't have the same desire that those brethren did 50 years ago.
I think you're right. I think you're right, man. We become so busy and enamored with all kinds of stuff, that we don't have time to talk to our neighbor about the gospel or a person. We don't have time to put a track off a rack and put it on a table when we, eating a meal. We just don't have time. Now, could we reach as many people today as they did then? Can we do that? Sure we could. If we only had the evangelistic zeal that those brethren had. I remember when I was a little boy, I was probably Buddy's age. Anna's age. And I'd go with my dad. Anybody remember Jewel Miller film strip? And Michael does, Now, I'm talking about the real Jewel Miller film strip, where you had the film, and you put it in that thing, and you'd roll it, and it'd go ding, and you'd roll it again, ding. Yeah, had a record player too. And, I remember that. I remember as a little boy, gospel meetings. I remember when I was a little boy, probably 10, 12, 13 years old, we were living in Georgia, and it was interesting, sit at the feet of Brother Foy Wallace Jr. And we sit in a building, and that guy preached for an hour and a half. And they had my attention. But there wasn't any air. I remember the windows were up because we didn't have air conditioning. Okay? People would flock, and their meeting lasted what, Michael? 2 weeks. 2 weeks. Yeah. So it seems today that there's not as much of a yearning for the gospel on our part, Mac, like Mac said. Sister Aisha.
Around it, and people our age, people are my age, and you are younger. This is the cool thing
I can see that to a degree, but I think the problem lies, I think it goes back to what Max says, the problem isn't people aren't receptive. I think the problem goes with us just not caring in the gospel. Would you think that might be our problem? And I would agree, actually. I think you're right to a degree, but our problem is we're just not caring in the gospel because we're too busy. Just too busy. Let me get Brother Vernon and then Brother Glenn. Can we do that on Sunday morning and Wednesday night? Can we grow as a congregation on Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night? Can we? No. You know, it's convenient. You know, it's easy to just meet talk buddy on Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. That's convenient. Okay? Christianity is a religion of inconvenience. Okay. It's an inconvenient religion. You know what I mean by that, right? Not that Christianity is inconvenient, but being a Christian requires me to do things that are inconvenient for me to do. If I, Luke 14, count cost. If I count cost, what it requires of me to be a Christian, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be inconvenient. Brother Glenn. Right. Yeah.
You know, it's, you can't preach Christianity.
That's
not,
you can't have
it. Yeah. That's
the idea of our society. And I agree. I would agree with that to a degree, like I would with Ashley. But the thing is, I think as a country, and to go back to what Vernon said in his notion, yeah, we are divided. You know, I heard on talk radio the other day that we are actually in a civil war, another civil war from liberal to conservative. Okay, we are fighting one another, and we try to devise so many plans. Let's do this to fix that. Let's do this to fix this. Let's do this to fix that. Folks, the only thing that's going to fix the problems of the world is what? The gospel. I don't care how many town meetings you have and all these other things that we have. I'm not saying they're wrong, but the only thing that's going to change a heart and change a mind and an attitude is the gospel. That's it. That's the only thing that's going to change the world. And that's why we as Christians, members of the Lord Church, the one true church, folks, if we don't teach, nobody is. I think we're members of the church here. You think the Baptists are going to teach it? The Methodists, Presbyterians, Jehovah's Witnesses, they're not going to teach it. We have to teach it if it's going to be taught. It helps us to understand we are a peculiar people and we have a job to perform and we got to do it. That's what's going to bring our world together. Ashley, do you have something for you to go? Yes.
Yeah. Whether it be in public schools, daycare, things like that, that's a difficult dynamic.
That's true.
But I can't stay home and homeschool her if we are going to be able to afford a home and afford
right.
the things that we need to have. So I mean, if you really think about that, I mean, my grandmother was home with five children. She never worked in an actual job a day in her life.
Yeah.
So she was there with her children, and she was able to do some of the things that Ryan.
Don't you think it's sometimes the do's that we think sometimes, and this is a thought, our needs or our wants sometimes become our needs. Our wants become our needs sometimes. And I'm just throwing that out there. Michael and then Brother Brian.
I think sometimes we look through life with a blind eye, you know. We only see what's in front of us and what we're having to deal with. Where we don't look back and say, you know what, some of the people in the early days or in the early Christianity, when the church started, they threw a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, we weren't thrown into the feds of the lions, thrown into the arena, or killed, persecuted as Paul did. That doesn't happen, at least not in this country.
No.
So I think we lose sight of the fact that times were tough then, too. They didn't have Facebook and Twitter.
Which might be a good thing.
Yeah, probably so. They had issues.
Just my opinion. I think Michael makes an excellent point. And that right there, Michael, when that kind of statement is made, it makes me wonder. And then I'll go to Brother Brian. What would happen? Forget Paul and Peter. If those that the church at Philadelphia, those two faith congregations in the book of Revelation chapter 2 and 3, if a group, 50 of those brethren, were put to death, if they were to come back and sit worship with us for a month, what do you think they'd think? Those brethren in Revelation 2 and 3 came back and worshiped with us a month. You think they're people all out? I think so. I think they would think. It don't matter. Brother Brian. Yeah. And I think that brings up this point. Going back to kind of what Glenn said and Sister Ashley said. We see these people that Glenn talked about and Ashley talked about. And we see those people in the church, the people in Corinth, and we think those people have no desire to become a Christian. They do this. They're having fun. But how many of those people are so miserable in the lifestyle that they want to get out? And we prejudge them, which we all do. We prejudge them, thinking the gospel can't change those people. Folks, the gospel can change anybody. If we prejudge people, and I'm not saying you do, but we all do. If we prejudge people and say they'll never change because they're enjoying their lifestyle, we'll never even give a chance to those people to become a Christian. So the gospel can do that, okay? The gospel can change. We'll just give it to them. if we'll just present it, okay? All right, thank y'all, Lord willing, next week we'll trudge on.
Thank you for listening to the Augusta Road Church of Christ. Located in Greenville, South Carolina, the Augusta Road congregation worships God in spirit and in truth in a friendly and loving environment. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for Augusta Road COC. And if you're ever in Greenville, South Carolina, we would love for you to come by for a visit.